Eric Fischel is America's foremost narrative painter, and his paintings hang in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Whitney Museum of American Art, the Museum of Modern Art, and in collections throughout the world. He tells his story in the new book, Bad Boy, My Life on and Off the Canvas. It is published by Crown, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Eric Fischel to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's great to be here. Thank you for asking me.
At what point did you know that you wanted to share the story?
It was a slow and evolving process. I play tennis with Michael Stone, who's the co-writer on the book, and we spent a lot of time talking about art, not about me, but about art. And the book started out to be a book about the school that I went to, Cal Arts, and all the great artists that came out of there. And then it sort of evolved over time into a much more specific and more personal kind of memoir.
What do you think it was about those early years that were so defining of what it is about a place that does produce such wonderful art and artists?
Well, that was the mystery we were trying to unravel. I think part of it was the spirit of the time, which was coming out of the 60s with a sense of all of new possibilities, a kind of profound sense of play, not silliness, but play in a creative sense. That was, you know, all geared towards trying to, possibly use art to change the fabric of culture. And because it was a brand new school, it opened its doors in 1970, it attracted a lot of precocious kids, I guess, who wanted to be there. So,
in what way did you feel that you were precocious?
I actually didn't feel I was precocious, but I had teachers who supported my work as a young student who thought I was much better than I thought I was. And they were the ones that said, you should go here, you should try this. And when the school accepted me, which really surprised me, I was coming from Phoenix, Arizona at the time, and I just didn't think that I had seen. But when I got accepted, it sort of began to change my opinion of what I could possibly be.
When you took on this project and you started to talk about your wife, we see obviously there's this ongoing question in the book about, as you refer to it, as the great debate as to what qualifies as art. And was there an aha moment for you when that became known?
Well, it wasn't specific to one moment, but it was an ongoing sort of affirmation. And the thing is that what I've come to realize is that if you're a painter, you're actually a painter. That is, that you don't have a choice to be one, you are one. And what your choice is either to give up or to become better at it. But that the whole thing about painting is that it's the way that you process information. You know, painters see the world in terms of a series of shapes and colors and a sense of a connection to a material that transforms inanimate objects into an animated experience. It's a totally different kind of sensibility than somebody who it comes at it from a different, like photography or writing or another form of the creative arts. So on one hand, part of my experience was over time trying different things and always coming back to painting made me realize painting was where I belonged, and it was just a matter of trying to be better at it. And then also over time, it was about getting rid of what people had told me art was discovering for myself what it was for me and pursuing that.
With that, does there come a confidence? I mean, do you become a better artist when you are confident of what it is that you are doing?
I don't think there's an artist out there that isn't looking for love.
Right.
So I would say, you know, and with love comes confidence. Yes, there are people out there who see you for who you are and applaud you for what you do and stuff like that. There's certainly confidence building in that. So, but also the thing about when you're doing the kind of art that you are meant to do, that you're designed to do, built to do, your DNA is all about that. When you're doing that kind of art, you feel an integration. You don't feel like you're working outside of yourself. You feel like you're working within yourself. And that, of course, is a real confidence builder as well.
And it seems as though that's impossible to describe, really, of to label of what type of artist you are. That's a very unfair thing, I would think.
Yeah, I think that you know, for yourself on that, for the artist on that journey, it's one of self-discovery. So, you know, the labels don't actually help you, but, you know, over time, you find yourself doing something. There's a consistency that happens. There's a repetition. There's a thing where if you're lucky, you latch onto your themes early enough, and then you spend the rest of your life developing them.
You do write in the book about the effect of the impact that success had on you, and that you start off the book with the opening of the Bad Boy exhibit at the Whitney, and how drugs and alcohol had a terrible impact on that night, but ultimately a turning point for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, success, I think, is a it's both a deep desire on one hand, and it's also a destabilizing experience. It's something that for a period of time makes you feel like you're actually living outside of yourself, almost in a surreal way. The things that, the doors that open, the way people all of a sudden are looking at you differently or treating you differently, things like that kind of really certainly threw me off my center. The drugs and alcohol started long before success did. I mean, I was a kid of the culture of the 60s, for one thing, so there's a lot of experimentation there and a lot of hedonism, but the combination of the pressures of success and the sort of constant sort of need to escape turned out to be a bad combo, and I started to really struggle with it. So at some point I was able to pull back before I went too far down that road and say, I got to do this another way.
When you look at your life, and as you did for this book, and you look at the work that you produced both before and after that time and that turnaround, do you see a difference? I mean, obviously, I would think there's a conscious or maybe subconscious of knowing where you were at a particular moment, but do you feel that it had an impact on your art?
I don't, actually. I mean, I think there were some positive things from psychedelic drugs, for example, had a positive effect on my art in that it created a kind of visual acumen that might not have been released had I not experimented with that. That's not a recommendation to kids. I'm just saying that's something that was a side effect of the drug. But other than that, the other drugs and alcohol and stuff were not, but I had a kind of discipline where I would in my studio, be sober. In my studio, I'd be focused and sober and straight, and I would do that. And then when I left my studio, I would, I'd indulge. Let's put it that way. Mm. So I would say no in the short run, from getting straight to not getting straight, or not being straight to getting straight. There's no discernible difference in the work itself. Over a very long period of time, there's a tremendous growth, I think, in the work in terms of my relationship to what I'm looking at, to people, to my feelings of disconnect and things like that. So,
you write about the 90s and a feeling that you had lost your place in the art world's conversation. And you write about, you have a quote from John McEnroe, actually, who says, one of the great things that Mac taught me was how to lose, or more precisely, how losing is a natural part of every competitor's life. How tough a lesson was that for you?
Well, it was a great lesson. I mean, I think it's something that in the art world, talking about competition, displaying competitive stuff, you know, it was something that every artist does, but they don't like to acknowledge, right? It's like a primitive state or something like that. And so there's a lot of denial around the competitive aspect of art. But in sports, of course, everything's about being competitive, and that's the nature of the beast. And so what I found among athletes was that they were much more comfortable in their competitive natures than in the art world. And becoming friends with McEnroe and you know, watching him compete and watching him talk about it. And then when he finally, you know, we were talking about it and in terms of losing and stuff, and he had that really succinct thing to say about it. It took an enormous pressure off of my back, because it clarified something. You know, the thing is, it's not the losing, it's the fear that goes with that. That is the debilitating part of it. You lose, you try it again, whatever. Eventually you win, but if you become afraid of losing, then you stop trying, and that's a whole other thing.
And can you still look at the work, that your past work, as a success, and at least have that at the baseline?
Yeah, I think like most artists, you know, you look at your work, seeing all the things that failed in it, and I start out like I think most artists, wanting to make something that's perfect, and you have a great idea, great vision, great enthusiasm for it, and then the end result always falls short of that. And yet it has in it the best you can do. So you let it go and you move on. But, you know, every time I see an older work, I see, you know, what I was trying, what I was able to do, and where I fell short of it. And, you know, sometimes that drives me crazy.
The name of the book is Bad Boy, My Life on and Off the Canvas. It is published by Crown. Eric Fischel, a great pleasure of having you on the program. I thank you very much for spending time with us.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Bad Boy, My Life on and Off the Canvas. The book is published by Crown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.